Roberta Blevins, and this is Life After MLM, a podcast where we worked in the stigma of failure in an industry systemically designed for you to fail. Join us as we dive into the real-life stories of survivors, experts, and advocates, as we debunk the common myths and fallacies of cults, frauds, scams, and multi-level marketing. Hey, Hunvots and Hunbros. I hope everybody has been having a really nice spring break wherever your spring break landed. We're going back after 2 weeks out, but I have friends whose kids are going out next week. So I don't know what's going on. I don't know why there isn't a universal spring break. What is happening? Abby and I really tried to utilize our week together for spring break, and it was really fun. We ended up going to Universal Studios in Hollywood. And the ticket that we were going to get was literally only $10 cheaper than the SoCal pass for the whole year. That's how they get you, right? So we got passes and it was really fun. I have not been to Universal Studios in 30 years. The only thing that's still there from when I went is the tram ride, which isn't saying much. It was really cool. We had a really great time. I actually got recognized, which is always surreal every single time, but it was really cool and fun and awesome. We had a great conversation in line in Mario Land. Mario Land was really cool. And the Mario Kart ride we rode, like everything was really fun. Abby and I had a great time. It is super interactive and we cannot wait to go back. I had a great time with my kid and what more can you ask for? This episode is heavy. It is April, which is Child Abuse Awareness Month, and we are diving into different types of child abuse. And today we are going to be talking about medical child abuse. You may know it as Munchausen by proxy. It is also known as factitious disorder imposed on another. We've had my friend Andrea Dunlop come on the show to talk about this before. She has a fantastic podcast. If this is something that you're interested in, called Nobody Should Believe Me, Andrea is incredible. She'll be coming back on the show at least one or two more times this year. And she has an incredible website called Munchausen Support if you are looking for more information. I want to say thank you to everybody who has reached out about the episode last week. I know it was really heavy. Sandy has gotten so many messages of support from former members of iTown and former staff members of iTown. And we are having conversations with other survivors. People are joining the group. People are emailing me and messaging me. We are definitely opening this conversation a little bit more this year. And I am really, really just impressed by the reach of this show and how many people listened to that episode and felt compelled to reach out and add another piece to this puzzle. So thank you so much. You guys are just, I know. See, this is what I mean when I say I have the best listeners, okay? Like, how quickly did we, like, it's just, when Sandy and I talked, I really sat her down and I was like, look, I cannot promise anything. I can't promise that you're going to hear from anybody. I can't promise that people will support you, but I can promise that I can give you a platform and help you tell your story. And she said, that's all I need. But I had this idea in the back of my head. I was like, I feel like somebody will reach out, but I can't promise that. You guys know. And a couple of the things that I told her I hoped would happen have already happened. And I just, that's because of you guys. So thank you so much for being active listeners and active participants in this conversation. I know Sandy really appreciates it as well. Couple of trigger warnings. Aside from the medical child abuse, we also talk about adoption, evangelical upbringings, and generational trauma in this episode. There is some comedy. There are some laughs. This is life after MLM, after all. But it is a heavy episode, so just be prepared going into this episode. I also want to welcome our newest members to the Patreon, Christy Freeman, Shanna DeShane, Snickerdoodle, I love that, and Michelle Miller. Welcome. Poke around. There's so much content for you to catch up on. And please make sure that you're joining us on Monday mornings when we go live and have conversations about all the fun stuff that happened in the past week. We are also going to be doing some more watch parties coming up in the Discord. So if that's something that sounds interesting to you, make sure that you head over there and you join our Discord as well. We would love to have you. And lastly, I'm sure you heard that bumper, but if you are a member of the Patreon, you probably didn't. This is one of those instances where I'm like, hey, I know you're ad-free, but go listen to the ad. The very first ad from now going on for the next 2.5 weeks. And this is for people listening into the future too, who are never even going to hear this. It is a call to action for the MLM conference that is coming up in May. I need your help. If you can provide some help, I would be forever grateful. You can head to mlmconference.com to register. It is completely free. And you can also head to bit.ly, you know, bit.ly/promise-loss if you're interested in participating in the project that I need help with. And if you're listening in the future, you can watch that presentation and the entire MLM conference at mlmconference.com. Without further ado, enjoy this episode and I'll see you next week. Welcome back to another episode of Life After MLM. Today, we are talking about medical child abuse. It is a topic that came up last year. I had my friend Andrea Dunlop come on the show and talk about it. It has come up so much in, like Andrea and I talked about, the media in film and television as a plot device. But recently, it has come up a lot in documentary format and in the news, like with the documentary, The Curious Case of Natalia Grace, and the Gypsy Rose Blanchard case that is in the media again right now. So I think it is a really good time to talk about this again. I would like to welcome to the show, Anne. It's nice to have you. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm so pleased to be here. Thank you so much. I'm doing great.
Good. That's good to hear.
All things considered.
Right. So you and I had a pre-call. That doesn't happen often, but you have a very complicated story. And I was so excited that we actually did that because a lot of my questions were answered. And hopefully, as we tell this story, I'll be able to help explain certain details and things with you for the listeners if it gets a little confusing. But first and foremost, Anne, I want to start at the beginning. We're going to talk about, like I said, medical child abuse. Some of you may know it as Munchausen by proxy. We're also going to be talking about adoption and some of the things that happen in that space. So these are your trigger warnings, and I'm going to hand it off to you, Anne, and let's start at the beginning.
So I am from a Midwestern state. I've lived in a Midwestern state almost all of my life, but I was born in the state where I was raised. I was born to someone who did not raise me. I was adopted as an infant by my parents. And when I say my parents, I do mean the two people who raised me. They're the only parents that I know. And so that's why I use that word. When I was a child, one of the early things I knew about myself is that I was adopted. I remember introducing myself that way. I would say, this is my full name, this is my phone number, and I'm adopted. I always knew. It was never something that I didn't know. It wasn't talked about except just as a straight fact about my life. I have an older sibling, my parents' first child, and then there was some situation where my mother was apparently told or not by a physician not to have any more children, and they adopted me. And then, you know, how these things happened, about 3 years later, there was another sibling born into the family. I am an adopted child sandwiched between two of my parents' biological children. My life starts out weird right from the jump. It's kind of weird that I'm like that. In my childhood, there are certain things that I remember. And some of the things that I remember that stick out to me now, lots and lots of doctor's visits. And I remember my mother explaining to me at different points why I had so many doctor visits. And I remember being a very young child and being told that I was so sickly when my parents brought me home that after some doctor visits, after some exploration as to what was making me so sickly, my parents were told, there's really nothing we can do for her. Take her home and love her and wait for her to die.
Wow.
I was a very young child when I was told this. A very young child.
Was that because the doctors couldn't find anything wrong with you? So obviously the only outcome would be that you're not going to survive whatever you have?
Well, here's the thing, Roberta. I'm not convinced that my parents were actually told that.
That's the other possibility, right?
I think this was just kind of the start of things unfolding that would be some half-truths, some outright lies, some imagination about my life. Because there was always someone in my house sick. When I was a little kid, that person was me. I was told at various stages, my mother told me a little bit later, she told me that I was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. I'm 60 years old. Clearly, I didn't have cystic fibrosis.
No.
Another thing that I was told was that I had celiac. Now, this is a long time ago. This was in the late 60s, early 70s, and not everybody and their uncle had celiac, meaning that it wasn't as diagnosed as it is now. Basically, my mother told me that I looked like one of the starving children in Africa because my belly was big, but the rest of me was skinny, and the doctors couldn't figure out why. And so they thought I had cystic fibrosis, and then they thought I had celiac, and then they thought I had some sort of autoimmune disease. I remember getting NG tubes, you know, down my nose into my stomach. I remember I got a series of injections called gamma globulin. It wasn't really explained why I had those, but I'm a nurse, so I have done some research to try to see why you would give gamma globulin injections to a young child. I can't come up with any reason that someone would do that. But I know I did have the injections. I remember. Our family called them my GG shots. And so I would be going to the doctor to get my GG shot. And I got these, like, I don't know, once a month or whatever.
Now, what would be a reason for someone to get a GG shot? Like, if they needed one, what do they do?
It's part of the immune system. Globulins are part of the immune system. So there must have been, at some point, someone who wanted to boost my immune system in some way. That must have been, because I really did get those shots. That was not a story that was told to me. I do remember getting them. So all these different things, I just grew up knowing that I was very sick, that I could probably die at any time. That was my childhood. Now, there came a time when, you know, my younger sibling was getting to be a little bit older, and suddenly my younger sibling was sick all the time. And my younger sibling, I'm not going to tell their story for them, but they had some very invasive procedures and missed a year of school and things like that just because they were sick all the time. We moved because my younger sibling was so sick. We built a whole new house because my younger sibling was so sick.
Wow.
So that was kind of our childhood. Everybody was sick all the time. But the things that we were sick with, if I had cystic fibrosis in 1963, I wouldn't still be alive.
No.
If I had been celiac all those years ago, I wouldn't be able to have just eaten the slider I just ate, right?
Right.
Because it has gluten in it. None of the things turned out to be things that I actually had. And when I later asked about these things, first of all, my mother did not want to talk about them. She didn't want to talk about my childhood, my very vague, copious numbers of childhood illnesses. But the answer was always, well, we took you to church and we prayed for you and you got healed from all that. You don't have that anymore.
Oh, okay. Jesus healed you. All of your mysterious diseases were healed by Jesus. So was your family evangelical then?
Yes.
And was that a big part of your childhood?
That was a huge part of my childhood.
So it's just another coincidence, another box to check off on the strange things that happened as I grew up. Like, what is like the age of your earliest memories of being sick?
I know I was hospitalized when I was 5. That's my earliest memory of having an NG tube, I remember, because what I told them, you know, they were trying to calm me down to put the NG tube in, and I told them, I will only let you do this if my mommy is in the room.
Wow.
Yeah. So I already was connecting illness and treatment and testing with my mother being involved in it somehow.
Right.
Because they were telling me that they weren't going to let her be in the room. And they finally did because they needed to get this tube down this kid. And I was putting up a fuss. So my mother was, you know, in there while I was having all the testing, which was, I remember getting the feeling that was kind of unusual.
How old were you when you started questioning this stuff? Were you still a kid?
I would occasionally, you know, when I was a teenager, I would ask some questions because, you know, teenagers are trying to figure themselves out. So I was trying to figure out, what is my deal? Because I'm still alive. I was told my whole life I was, you know, sick unto death, and I'm still alive. And here I am, like 14, 15. And, you know, 14, 15-year-old girls tend not to have wonderful relationships with their mothers. And I remember just kind of trying to just poking at my mother a little bit and saying, what is this all about? I was sick my entire childhood. You kept telling me I was going to die and I'm still alive. What gives? And then she would tell me the story about taking me to church and Jesus healing me. And then she didn't want to talk about it anymore. It made her very uncomfortable to talk about the fact that I was still alive.
Well, I mean, you had so many of these illnesses that could have killed you that you were miraculously cured from. So anytime you had any questions about like, oh, I don't have this disease anymore, it like went back to Jesus cured you. I don't want to talk about this anymore. And the subject changed.
Pretty much. Yeah. Because those were the points in life where my younger sibling was starting to be kind of the focus of the family. All the energy was being put on them being ill. That's kind of, I think, where they, I say they, but I really think it was my mother transitioning everything. My dad's deceased. I don't know what his involvement really was in all this. You know, I know the statistics. I know how this usually works in married couples where one parent is hyper-focused on the illness of the child and the other parent's just kind of going along for the ride. And I think that was probably what was happening with my dad, but I'll never be able to ask him.
Right. What about your other sibling?
I have an older sibling who I think I heard a story at some point that my older sibling had asthma when they were very young. Nothing much else came of that because I think the way I see it, I think the focus shifted. Like first it was the oldest child, then it was me, and then it was the younger child. Oh, and in between there, we had a house full of foster children too, which I'm also learning is another feature of some families where there is some medical child abuse or some factitious disorder is not only adopted children, but also foster children. Now, I don't have any recollection of any of the foster children being told that they were dying all the time. I don't know exactly what the connection is there, but I've listened to a lot of Andrea Dunlop, and I know that there's a connection.
Yeah, it's almost as if everybody got their turn and they aged out.
I think so.
They got to the point where they were old enough to ask questions that couldn't really be have the subject changed or move on from. It went maybe just to the younger sibling.
Illness and medical things are still the focus of my relationship with my mother. That's all we talk about on the phone. She wants to know if I'm sick. No, really, are you sick? Nope, Mom, I'm fine. Okay, well, I'll tell you the 15 different ways that I'm sick then. And we just talk about hospitals and doctors and illnesses. And that's the relationship we have.
So do you think that possibly her factitious disorder is now being imposed on herself as opposed to her young children?
I do believe that, yeah.
And have you ever had conversations about factitious disorder or Munchausen or anything like that with her?
No.
Every time even instances of those things come up, she changes the subject. So you're not even, you're, if we can't right. even talk about it, we're not even going to get into the diagnosis part.
Roberta, she won't even talk about my adoption. So
wow.
That subject is off the table. We don't talk about it.
It's so interesting to me because, I mean, I have very similar things in my family too, where I'll ask questions about things that had happened in the past and we just don't talk about it. It's just like, oh, nobody knows. Nobody cares about that. I'm like, I'm literally asking questions about this. I'm curious. Oh, no. I don't remember that. It's a generation that doesn't really like to talk about it.
Correct. My husband and I have two grown children. It very much impacted the way I raised my children. I thought really carefully about taking them to the doctor. I don't go to doctors, really, in my adult life. I go when I have to. I avoid it at all costs. I don't know. It creeps me out to go to the doctor. I'm full up. I've had it. I've done. I've had enough doctors in my life.
Yeah. It's triggering.
Very triggering.
I could understand that. Yeah, absolutely. But it impacted the way that you dealt with your children and the way that you parented your children. Were you more willing to listen to them when they had opinions about things and answer questions when they had questions about things?
Yes. A big yes. We talked about everything with our kids. There's nothing off the table ever. And it was that way from the get-go with my kids. I was not going to have children grow up in my home wondering if their entire life was a lie. Was there anything about their life that was real?
Do you ever wonder how much of your personal data is out there on the internet just for anyone to find? I promise it's more than you think. Your name, contact info, social security number, home address, even information about your family members. It's all being compiled by data brokers and openly sold online. This can lead to a lot of problems, including identity theft, phishing attempts, harassment, and unwanted spam calls. But now you can protect your privacy with Delete Me. Signing up for the service is super easy. Just provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. They send you regular, personalized privacy reports showing what info they found, where they found it, and what they removed. I got my report, and I was floored with the results. Of the 105 data brokers they checked, 83 of them had my data. Delete Me then removed 173 listings of my personal data off the internet. And they make sure that it stays off too. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me at a special discount just for our listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/MLM and use promo code MLM at checkout. The only way to get the 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/MLM and enter code MLM at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/MLM, code MLM.
And that's how I felt about my life. We can't talk about my adoption. There must be something terrible there that I can't know about. We can't talk about all these illnesses that I supposedly had as a child. We can't even broach the subject. So there must be some terrible secret that I don't know. Nothing about my life, my childhood, my raising is open for discussion.
So at what point in your life did you realize that what you went through as a child was actually factitious disorder?
I was 59 years old. It was about a year ago. I had been listening to Andrea Dunlop, you know, her podcast, Nobody Should Believe Me. She was talking about different case studies of what happens in families and patterns that happen and red flags that happen. And I'm literally driving down the road. It's a work day. I know exactly where I was. I know exactly the roundabout that I was in when I made this discovery because I drove through it today. And I remember thinking, oh my God. That's what that was. How did I get to 59 years old and not know that's what that was? How?
Wow.
I can't explain it. And then I felt kind of stupid. I'm like, I have gone through my entire adult life and just thought, oh yeah, I was really sick as a kid. I had all these diseases. Interesting. I'm still alive. That's weird. I can't believe I live to be 60. It's very strange to me that I'm 60 years old and still alive. Still.
I could imagine that it would be so strange to have so many questions about your childhood, so many unanswered, you know, moments and just times where you were like, I don't understand what's going on. And then to be like driving in your car, listening to a podcast and have somebody on the other end say, you know, these are the signs of this thing. And you're just like, oh my God, I have that thing. Like that's right. What this is. So what's the next step? After you're sitting and you're listening to this and you realize, oh my gosh, this might be what I have or what I grew up with.
Well, the first thing is just incredible sadness for the little girl that had a lot taken away from her and had a lot given to her that she didn't deserve and has a life just filled with questions and almost no answers. A lot of sadness and then a lot of anger. It's heartbreaking to be angry of your only living parent. It's really hard.
Yeah.
She's still my mom. She's my mom.
Do you still have a relationship with her?
Well, yes. I mean, I have a relationship with her, but it's built on, I call her once a week or once every other week, and we talk about what doctor she's been to, and we talk about if she's been in the hospital since the last time I talked to her. And she asks me if I'm sick, and I tell her I'm not. And she asks me if my husband's sick, or if my kids are sick, or if anybody's sick. And then she gets bored, and then we hang up.
Wow. What was life like during the COVID pandemic with your mom and those checkups?
You know, I don't really know. I think probably it was very difficult for my mother because she's used to going to the doctor once a week, twice a week, whatever. And that was a big part of her life that was cut out of her life. And she wasn't able to do that. I mean, that's, she plans her whole month around doctor visits. That's pretty much all she does. And now she has to go farther away to go to the doctor because none of the doctors in the small town where she lives will see her anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
She's like doctor shopped her way out of her own town.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, that was one of the really interesting things that Andrea was saying on the show, because you see people on Facebook or on social media, and then you hear stories about like Natalia Grace or even like Ruby Frankie.
Right.
And these families where there's this abuse that's happening that you don't really know about or see. And it really like gives me pause. It makes you look at everybody in like a suspicious way. You're like, they go to the doctor too much. Is this happening? But one of the things that Andrea said is like a child's medical record for like a normal healthy kid by the time they're age 5, you know, maybe 5 to 20 pages of stuff, depending on
right.
if they got the flu every year or not or whatever. But a child who is experiencing medical child abuse would have a stack several inches thick, even more so than maybe a regular adult would have over the course of their lifetime of regular doctor's visits. It's interesting that you said, you know, I'm thinking on one hand, COVID could have been something that was like, oh, this is what's happening. But what you said was the opposite of what I was expecting, was that an integral part of her life was taken from her because she no longer could go to the doctor for just little things. Like everything was shut down and there were so many extreme rules and guidelines that you had to follow. I didn't even think about the fact that the thing that she most likely finds comfort in was taken from her. So it's interesting that maybe she never got COVID. She stayed away from the hospital. It's very interesting. She was like, I'm not supposed to go, not even for the fake stuff. I'm just going to stay away. It's very interesting that that was the outcome. It's not what I was expecting. It was about a year ago that you decided. So what have you been up to in the past year in terms of coming to terms with this, with healing, with moving past this, with making so that it's not such a triggering topic for you?
Well, I'm still kind of triggered by it. But one of the things that I did was actually, since I was not afforded the luxury of having answers to what's going on with me, I kind of dug a little deeper in it and tried to listen to other people's experiences, seeking out YouTube and podcasts and books and things like that to kind of, I don't know, maybe it's vicariously live through other people's experiences of this. You know, if I can't get my own answers, I can get some answers. If the people around me who know what was what are not going to answer the questions, I can at least dig a little deeper and look at other possibilities of what's happened in other people's lives. The very first thing I did when I discovered this was, well, had to finish my workday. And then I came home and I immediately told my spouse. I'm like, I got a really super weird thing to tell you. And I don't know if you're going to believe me or not, because, you know, it's weird. Nobody should believe me, but this is what happened. And I told him, and he, of course, immediately, he's like, yeah, your mom is weird. You had a weird childhood.
He's like, yeah, no, that checks out, actually.
There was some weird shit that went down from what you've told me. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, yeah, that I totally see how that happened. Yeah. And then I told my kids, and my kids were like, yeah, yep, story checks out, mom. Yeah, because my kids always kind of wondered why I never went to the doctor. You know, I'll say, oh, yeah, the arthritis in my knee is really bad. Bet you haven't gone to the doctor for it, have you? I'm like, no, I have not.
I mean, you have enough doctor's appointments that you've gone to that you've been to more than enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm full up.
I understand. I absolutely understand.
Yeah.
Wow. Yep. So you go home, you tell your family, and not only are you met with like them believing you, but they're like, oh yeah, no, totally. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And they give like examples as to why they believe you as well. They're like, yeah, she's weird. Like, yeah, that sounds like grandma.
Yeah.
And how did that make you feel?
Well, that made me feel like, why did it take me 59 years to see it for myself and to put a name on it? This was not the first time I'd ever heard of Munchausen. This was not the first time I'd ever heard of any of this stuff. I've known about this stuff. I went to nursing school. We talked about that stuff. I worked in a psych hospital. We talked about that stuff. I don't know why that was the moment that it all clicked into place for me. And it's like, holy crap. So, you know, so I'm kind of digging deep into the subject and trying to look at other people's experiences and looking for more clues as to what makes a person do this, because it's, you know, I figured out that it's not a psychiatric condition that you do this. It's a behavior, and that some people have underlying psychiatric conditions, but this is a compulsive behavior that people do. And, you know, from my time working in a psych hospital, I know the difference between those two things. You know, I do know that there was a great deal of trauma in my mother's life and in my father's life. Their childhoods, extremely traumatic and chaotic childhoods. So I don't doubt that kind of contributed, but a lot of people in their generation had chaotic and traumatic childhoods that have not been addressed.
It's very interesting, the older generations, like what they were put through, what they were taught is normal, what they passed on, what the younger generations have sort of said, no, we're not doing that anymore, and stopped right. These things. Like just having conversations and being open and willing to discuss things
right.
is a huge step from the generation that our parents came from.
Right.
Because we don't talk about anything in my family either.
We don't talk about Bruno, right?
Yeah. That's, oh my God. We watched that movie with my mom. This is so funny. We watched Encanto with my mom. And I was laughing at that song, We Don't Talk About Bruno, because I was like, that's our family. Like, we don't talk about Bruno. And we were asking my mom, we're like, what do you think about this movie? And she's like, why does everybody hate the grandma so much? Like, she was so offended. And I was like, I don't think it's that they hate her. I just think it's like, she has some work to do. She was so mad. She's like, I don't know why we're watching this movie. So yeah, I was like, yeah, no, all of this checks out. Actually, this movie is great. But it's true. It's true. There's a whole generation of people who don't want to talk about the hard stuff.
Right.
And we're now seeing the effects of that abuse and that neglect in our lives as we're,
right,
you know, listening to podcasts or watching a documentary or right. connecting with somebody and saying, oh my gosh, that happened to me too. And being able to talk about these horrible things that have happened to us or just even moments in our life that were weird.
Right.
Hey, can I talk to you about this weird thing? And have that person go, you know what? Yeah, let us talk about that. And the fact that your mom won't just, I mean, it's like expected. Like mm-hmm. I wouldn't really expect less than that from that generation and from somebody who probably didn't really mean to be abusive.
Right.
And didn't know how to not be, though. Because when you listen to Andrea's podcast, you learn about all these different underlying conditions of some of these times these people say, like, I just wanted to feel love. I just wanted some attention. And the attention that I could get from the people that I love was pretending to be sick or having this community be there for me. It's really sad that we have to go to those extremes, but sometimes like that's what the underlying emotion is behind these behaviors.
So the big mystery to me, the biggest mystery, and I'll never have the answer to this question because I'm not asking her, how did she know which illnesses to pick? Because she picked classic illnesses in the 60s, where there was no internet.
Oh, yeah.
How did she do that? Asthma, cystic fibrosis, digestive disorders, breathing disorders, immune disorders. These are kind of classic factitious disorder upon another kind of conditions. And I will never figure out how my high school educated mother in the 1960s knew how to do that.
Yeah.
It's very mysterious.
It is interesting to think about because, again, we find out when we listen to these stories that it's a lot more common than we expect it is. And the statistics kind of skew on the it's not that big of a deal side, where we know that those numbers are not correct and those numbers should be a lot bigger. Nowadays, it's so, I hate to say the word easy, but it is because of the internet. It's so easy to figure out information. You just type it in and it comes up. And especially with Munchausen or factitious disorder, there are forums. There are possibly Reddit threads, possibly Facebook groups if you know what to look for.
Oh, you know there's a Reddit thread.
You know, to be like, right. What's an easy disease to fake and how do I fake it?
Yeah.
What's an easy disease that stumps people for a long time?
Right.
And what are the signs so that we can sort of fake those? Like, you know that that stuff happens now, but right. You make an excellent point. Like, where was she getting that information in the 60s? Was there a book that she read about a story and was inspired?
You know, I was thinking about this a couple days ago, and I remember that we had one of these big white, like, thick book, like a almost like a medical dictionary kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
We had some sort of medical information, but it's just, it's extraordinary that she was able to pull that off. It really was. I mean, you were able to figure out how to abuse your children like that without the internet.
Where did that information come from? Maybe she knew somebody who was doing something similar and she was emulating. I mean, there's so many possibilities. And without really having that conversation, which we know that she's not willing to have.
Right.
That question will likely go unanswered and will always be speculative.
And honestly, Roberta, at this point, I know that I'm not going to get help from my mother on this. And so I'm no longer willing to open up those conversations because I think in some strange way, we have so little time left on this earth together that benefits and risks of creating a rift forever, strangely, that's weird, right? Not wanting to create a rift with your abuser and still have that person somewhat in your life and my children's life. And if I have grandchildren in their life, if she's still alive and things like that, you know, I still want some, there's still some part of us that still wants a connection, as weird as it is.
Absolutely. How long do you think your mother has been, you know, self-imposing this factitious disorder on herself?
Here's another interesting story. When I was in the sixth grade, my parents were in a very serious car accident on an icy road in the middle of nowhere. They got broadsided by someone, and my mother was never the same. So that was 1974. My mother was never, ever the same. It was constant doctors and surgeries and doctors and surgeries and doctors and surgeries. And she had a feeding tube at one point, and she's, you know, all the things since then. So at least since 1974, she was able to make herself most of the focus.
Wow.
Yeah.
So until then, the children are the focus. And in 1974, she's in a serious enough accident that the entire narrative easily is able to be shifted onto her as the one with these life-altering illnesses and injuries.
Except for the part where I had a sibling who had to sit out a year of school because of some very nebulous sort of cardiac problem that could have been very easily treated. Except for that, my mother has been the focus. I mean, we're talking about my younger sibling and I would wake up after my older sibling had moved out of the home. And on any given day, our dad would come to us and say, well, your mother almost died last night. Like, what do you mean? Well, she almost died. Well, from what? Well, you know, from dying. She almost died. Her pain was so bad, she almost died. Oh, okay.
And just tell you this to tell you this?
Yeah. And also, you know, in terms of my dad speaking here. So I really think you should probably get in the kitchen and clean the kitchen because your mom almost died last night. Okay, Dad.
Oh, okay.
One time, and I don't know if my dad was just exasperated and tired when he said this, but he said, what would happen if the Undertaker walked into the house and the kitchen was all filthy? And I said, well, I would probably be crying because my mom was dead, Dad. So, you know, he didn't like that answer.
What a weird thing to say. One, that the Undertaker would even care at all.
Exactly.
They're like, Where's the bottle? Oh my God, this house is atrocious. Look at the sink and the dishes in the sink. Ugh, never mind. Find someone else. Like, that would never happen. So the fact that, like, even using that as emotional manipulation to be like, what do you think the gravediggers would think if they came here? And you're just like, what? Like, they'd be like, yeah, look at this mom. She's in a better place now because at least the dishes in heaven are clean. Like, what is this weird emotional manipulation? Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
I just want to walk around with a t-shirt that says, this is why I'm like this. Just like, listen to my weird childhood. This is why I'm like this.
Yeah. And then also, I think like everybody should have a sign in their house that says, sorry for the mess. We live here.
True.
Because come on, right?
Yeah.
I grew up with a parent who like, the rule was like the floors had to be clean enough to eat off of. And I'd be like, why would you eat off the floor? I would get in trouble for back talking when I was like, I didn't realize that was a back talk. I thought that was a legitimate question. I'm still confused. I never got a straight answer because I said so.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't even think I'm particularly neuro spicy, but yeah, I got in trouble for a lot of back talk too. I was the mouthy one.
Just a back talking kid. That's all.
I know.
I mean, I'm strong willed. And that's why James Dobson had to step in and help my mom with the child rearing. That's what happens. That's what happens when you're born with a strong will.
You know it's bad when Dobson's involved.
Right. I was like, check your bookcases, y'all. Look for the Dobson books. Might answer a lot of questions that you have about your life.
Yeah.
Wow. What an interesting turn of events for you in the last year.
Yeah.
How did it feel like? I mean, really, because it's like giving language to this strange phenomenon in your life. So now you have language, you know what it is, you have an understanding, you've done the research. Like, how does it feel? Is it helping you with closure of knowing that, like, this is what it is and this is who I am because of it?
I don't know about closure, but I think coping is a better word for me. It's helping me with coping with it. But it's also another layer of, holy crap, everything about my life is a lie. Everything. Is there anything true about my life? My birth certificate, work of fiction. Most adopted people have a birth certificate that's not the truth because it's just not. That's just how things work. And it's like, what illnesses did I and didn't I have? You know, if one of my kids came to me and said, hey, mom, we really want to know a very complete medical history of you because we're thinking about having a kid. I'd be like, I don't know. I don't know.
Wow. That's the other disservice. When people are unwilling to have the conversations, you know, those family secrets, those family histories, they die with that person. Mm-hmm. Like I look back and I wish that I would have had my podcast before my dad died because I feel like I would have whipped out a microphone at one point and been like, let me interview you about family stuff.
Yeah.
And I never got to. You never know any of this stuff. And then a lot of these people take it to the grave. They don't ever divulge the secrets, the family secrets. All of us have messed up families. Everybody has weird skeletons in their closets.
And then sometimes you get on Ancestry.com and you start looking at things like census records and birth records and death certificates. And you're like, not the story I was told. That didn't happen that way. Okay, interesting.
Oh, what else did you discover on Ancestry.com?
Well, I mean, the big news, the headline is that I found out who the male person who contributed DNA to me. I know who that person is. And I know who at least 9 of his other children are. He may have others, but I know at least who 9 of them are. I have met one of them and I've Facebook friends with a few of the others. But, you know, there's every family has family lore. Like grandma was part Indian and such and such person was born here and they were married at this point. And you do a little digging and you're like, okay, that's not how that happened at all. I was told that my grandmother was an orphan and she was raised in an orphanage. And then I find out when she's 18 and she moved to Colorado, her mother is in that household that she lived in. And the gentleman that she married, who ended up being my grandpa, was a boarder in that household. So, like, that's not the story I was told at all.
Wow. I have a kind of scandalous family history story that I'll share too. So my grandmother on my mom's side, my maternal grandmother, I feel like I've never gotten the whole story, but she did live in Denmark at some point in like the 30s and the 40s during the German occupation. She was taken back to Denmark to marry this like much older family friend who thought she was cute. I think she was very young, super creepy. And she has two children, my oldest uncle and my oldest aunt. And then she sees this cute guy on the street. And she's flirting with him from the top window of where they lived. And I think the story was that he worked for like the laundromat or something across the street. And she used to flirt with him. And they ended up having an affair. And she left the creepy old man. And she married the cute boy from the street. And the cute boy from the street is my grandfather. And they had four more children. And they escaped Denmark during the German occupation of World War II. Came to the United States. It was like a tumultuous love affair. And my grandmother got pregnant, but it wasn't with her husband. It was with my grandfather. So there's all these, we have a lot of skeletons in the closet. And these stories don't come out unless somebody's mad at somebody. And they're like, oh, well, do you want to know what someone else did? I'm like, I would love to, because this is the only way I ever hear about family history is when there's beef. So I think someone was mad at my grandmother, and that's how that story came out.
Wow.
And she passed away like 10 years ago. So, but, oh, man.
On the first weekend when I came home from college, I'm the only one in my family who went to college. I moved 2 hours away. I went to college. The first weekend that I came back, so I had probably been in college, I don't know, 3 weeks. I'm so sophisticated at this point, right? Been off the farm for 3 whole weeks. Woo! I come back and I decide, because I'm a dumbass, I decide that's the weekend I'm going to get for once and for all the full adoption information out of my mother. So I start to ask her questions and she just starts crying. And she says, we're not going to talk about this. Do you know what your father's childhood was like? And I said, no. So she tells me this story. It's a very tragic story of my father's childhood. I'm just going to say there was murder and suicide in it and leave it at that. She tells me this terrible story. And so then I'm crying and I'm apologizing to them for trying to bring up my adoption. And I'm trying to comfort my dad and all this kind of stuff. And then 30 years later, I'm digging through the ancestry and not everything is adding up to the story I was told. I mean, my dad had a real shit childhood. He really did. He did lose his parents early. Not the way I was, not quite as dramatic as how I was told.
There was no murder-suicide?
Oh, there was a murder, and I don't know about the suicide. One of his parents murdered the other one.
Oh, my God.
Yes, that really did happen. But there were other details that were not.
Right.
Yeah.
How strange.
This is why I'm like this.
Yeah. It's interesting how the older generations try to protect us by, like, just making shit up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man.
See, when I was a really little kid and I asked about my dad's parents, because I knew that my dad, I didn't have a grandma and grandpa on that side of the family. They would just say that everybody died of pneumonia, you know, just, you know, pneumonia swept through and killed everybody. So that's what I grew up with. And then I turn 18 and I get this other story and I'm like, holy crap, that's so much worse than everybody died of pneumonia. And then, so that's the family lore for 30 years. And then I start digging around. I'm like, none of those dates add up. So,
wow.
Yeah. I probably could do about 4 episodes.
You're like, I have a lot of skeletons in my closet, actually.
I have a lot of stories, Roberta, a lot of weird shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is just so interesting. I'm so fascinated by the medical child abuse. I don't even want to call it a trend, but like right now it's just, it's in the news so much and watching these documentaries and seeing these cases and, you know, Gypsy Rose getting out of prison and seeing her on social media and people bringing these things back up. And it's just, I want to make sure that we realize like who the victims are and that we're being really sort of ethical in our reporting of it and understanding that, you know, this is a really complicated topic. If you are interested in learning about factitious disorder imposed on oneself or imposed on another, which is the, you know, DSM-5 version of Munchausen and Munchausen by proxy. If you're interested in learning more about that, definitely check out Andrea Dunlop's podcast, Nobody Should Believe Me, because it is fantastic. I believe they're in season 3 right now. I know that they covered a little bit of the Gypsy Rose case, but if it's something that you're interested in and you're listening to this going, oh yeah, this is so fascinating, I understand. I would say start there because Andrea does a really good job of reporting on it ethically and talking to the victims and sharing those stories and getting to the root of these cases and really breaking them down. Do you have any other recommendations, Anne?
Oh, I have some books on my bookshelf. Andrea's novel, They Came Here to Forget, is kind of a weaving together of a fiction and her family's story, because there were accusations, not charges, but accusations of this happening in her family to one of her family members. I have a book on my shelf right now called Dying to Be Sick. That's another story about Munchausen by proxy. The season 3 of Andrea's podcast right now is dealing with the Take Care of Maya story.
Oh, right. Maya.
Yeah. And it is complicated in whole other ways. So, I mean, this is a family that the mother was being investigated for medical child abuse. They separated the child from the mother in a hospital. The mother subsequently died by suicide, and the family sued the hospital and got $250 million.
Oh my God.
For separating the child from the family. And so the false accusation crowd is really whipped up by this and trying to state that the people who don't believe that Munchausen by proxy exists or that medical child abuse is a thing are very whipped up by that story and are using that as kind of an example to say that, you know, investigators should not be investigating parents for taking their children to the doctor, that we should not listen to doctors who investigate child abuse, that those people are liars and they just want to take your babies away from you, and they're in cahoots with the court system and they're in cahoots with the social workers. And yeah.
Wow.
That's what her season 3 is about. It's fascinating and horrifying all at the same time, because it's creating an atmosphere where people see a story like that. That's very, you know, it's been a documentary. Now it's been a very famous court case. And I think, oh, so mothers really don't do that. It's just doctors who don't know what they're talking about. Okay. This Munchausen thing we've been hearing about for 20 years, it's not really a thing. Okay, we get it.
Wow.
And it really puts a lot of children in danger, I think.
Yeah, it does. Because again, like, we know that the numbers are a lot lower than what's actually happening. So for a narrative to be able to twist and say that this isn't even a thing, and that this lawsuit is proof that it's not a thing, is wild. Wow. Well, I'm so glad that you reached out to me and that you wanted to share your story of discovering this. And I'm so proud of you, and I'm so happy of what you've accomplished and what you've gone through in the past year to figure out what you went through as a child.
Right. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, of course. Are you ready to do some rapid fire questions?
Oh, of course. I was wondering what the rapid fire were going to be.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Give me a word that encompasses how you feel about medical child abuse.
Pissed.
Give me a piece of advice to somebody who maybe has somebody in their life that they think like, oh, this might be happening to my friend, my whatever, you know, there's some suspicion. Give me a piece of advice to that person who maybe wants to look deeper into this and maybe satiate their suspicions.
Ask questions, except I don't want to talk about it right now as an answer. Maybe ask again later and believe them.
We have to do an MLM question, Anne. What is the worst MLM in your opinion?
Gosh, I have two, because I have a family member who's deep in the plexus, and we lost our best friends in the 90s to Amway. So I have two.
Yeah. Okay. Both. I agree with you. Plexus, I'm not a fan. What is the hardest lesson that you have learned in the last year about medical child abuse?
My life is not a lie. It took me a long time to learn that. But I am here. I am alive. Even though some lies have been told about my life itself is not a lie. I deserve to be here.
And give me a positive takeaway from your last year.
I have such amazing family and friends who believe me, who looked at me and heard my stories. And even though they were like, holy shit, they believed me. They believed me.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's wonderful. Believe victims.
Yes.
Give them safe space to share their story, listen, ask questions, and support them.
Yep.
And believe them. Thank you so much, Anne, for being so vulnerable and talking to us today about your experiences with medical child abuse.
Thank you.
I really appreciate your vulnerability. And if anybody is listening right now and wants to expand on this topic, because we are going into child abuse this year and all of the different ways that children are exploited, we would love to have you come on the show and share your story too. Thank you again, Anne. Really, really appreciated this conversation. Thank you so much for listening to Life After MLM. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. And follow us on social media at Life After MLM Podcast or visit our website at lifeaftermlmpod.com. And don't forget to check out our Patreon for exclusive content and join the community on Discord. You can find all of the links to follow in our show notes. Life After MLM is produced by Roberta Blevins. Audio editing is done by the lovely Kayla Craven. Video editing by the indescribable RK Gold. And Michelle Carpenter is our triple emerald princess of robots. If you have a story about a cult, fraud, scam, or MLM and want to be on the show, please hit us up. We would love to help you tell your story and start your healing journey in life after MLM. See you next time, Hunts.